Hello, everyone. This is Steve Fitzsimmons with the Midville Heights Neighborhood Watch. The following retransmission is from our Neighborhood Watch meeting on January 12th, 2016. I hope you enjoy this. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for coming tonight. It's cold out there. Huh? What is it, 5 and 20 below with the wind? And so thank you for coming out in this cold weather. I appreciate it. And the strength of Neighborhood Watch is really in you. So really appreciate it. We had a change in plans at the last minute. Officer from the police department reported that Karen got called on the call at the last minute.
Oh.
And we won't be able to have the canine demonstration as planned. So it just happened. The crime just happened. And Slim is, instead of here showing off his capabilities, he's actually doing something out there and going after a scent on a trail. Dustin will be able to talk a little bit about that, about Slim's capabilities. And thankfully, he's here. And this is really his day off, his scheduled day off. And he had planned to come in today to talk to you because he hadn't had an opportunity to in the last couple. Because the last couple meetings, he's been called away on robberies and things. So the timing, maybe we should change our Neighborhood Watch time to 2 o'clock in the afternoon or something. 12 o'clock. When's it quiet, Dustin?
So we had a
pretty busy schedule as it was. We had Karen was going to talk about Canine Officer Slim and his capabilities, and I was curious to find out why he likes to drive through at Starbucks. So kind of looking forward to hearing that. And then we had Dustin's going to talk about the crimes that have been going on in our community, which is very important. And then we were going to talk about volunteer opportunities with Marge. And we also had Deanna. She's doing a research paper on neighborhood watches, community policing, and the Madison Police Department, which is an opportunity for everyone here to, you know, share their experiences with her, because she's doing this paper for a college project that's kind of important to her. So we were kind of tight as it was. We were going to try and do it all. So as it turns out, we may end up, you know, ending early so we get home. We'll see how it all goes. So first off, I'm going to lead off with Marge and let Marge talk a little bit about what the volunteer opportunities are, and then we'll move to Dustin and then Deanna.
Okay, thanks, Steve. So thanks all of you. You get a shout out for coming out tonight, not freezing and staying home under the covers like I felt like doing. So we appreciate that you're all here. My name is Marge Sutton, and I do live on Tokay Boulevard. I've been in the neighborhood since 1995. And I have to tell you that having lived in the neighborhood for that many years, you would think that I would know all my neighbors and that I would know all of the stuff that's going on. And it's only been this last year and a half that I have felt really close to not only my neighbors, but to the whole neighborhood. And it's really feeling good to me that I'm not alone in this, and I don't have to worry if I really need some help. There's somebody there that's going to be able to help me through the digest or through the network of some sort or phone call. And so hats off to all of you for helping us to build on that. We also have a few things that we want to call attention to before I talk a little bit about the survey. First of all, a shout out to Chief Koval for recognizing the Midville Heights Neighborhood Watch. I don't know how many of you see his blog or read his blog, but he talked a lot about us being a good example of how a neighborhood can pull together and reduce some of the crime. Among that, he did a great shout out to Steve and said that, and we all know that, we probably wouldn't be here tonight and the lights wouldn't be on if it wasn't for Steve coordinating and getting us, sort of prodding us to go forward with the Neighborhood Watch and really coordinating things. And also to Wendy, our editor of the paper, the newspaper or digest that you get every week. Wendy, stand up. We need you to be recognized. She did a great job. So between her and Steve, you ain't going to get away with anything. It's going to be in print if it's printable, and if it isn't, well, call them up and they'll tell you all about it. So we really appreciate all of that. The neighborhood, the next door email that some of us get helps us with little things like maybe we need somebody to help us do, get sand for sidewalks or something even bigger than that. And I'm just a new subscriber to that, so I really appreciate that, having that ability to reach out to my neighbors, even though I don't always know who they are when they first move in. And the Digest, Wendy does such a great job with keeping us informed on that. So one of the things that I also want to do a shout out to all of you and then the folks that were here last month also is that we handed out a survey, and we had actually ran out. For those of you here, we didn't think that we needed more than 50, and we ran out early on. So Mary is in the back with her green jacket on, and if you didn't get a chance to fill out a survey, she will be happy to give you one, and she'll even give you a pen to fill out the finish that out for us. So we will be taking all of them tonight and condensing them into the surveys that we got and the results that we got from the last meeting. And of the 50 that we handed out, we got 46 back. That is awesome, really awesome. And you told us that the best night to have a meeting is Tuesday, so we're sticking with that. You told us that right now you would like us to continue with monthly meetings. It's a little bit of a challenge to always get a speaker, but we're going to honor that and keep doing it as long as we can with your help as well. And you told us that things that were really important to you was planning these meetings, welcoming people, some fundraisers, perhaps donating to some charity that needs something yet to be defined, having people that will respond to people who are victims of crime, and for education. So you told us what you want, and we need your help. And with the reorganizational meeting that we're having next Tuesday night at the same time in the same place, those of you that signed up or didn't and want to still come, there's room for you. We're going to really do a working meeting next time with all of the things that you're asking us to take a look at. And with all your help, we'll be able to get all those things accomplished. So thank you so much. I've done surveys for many, many years, and I've never had such great results as 46 out of 50. So that's amazing. So with
thank
that,
you, Marge. Thank you.
We have a speaker in February, Laura Fay.
Yes.
Identity theft. And in March, it is Jill Kurofsky talking about victim advocacy. And in April, we have Justin. Maybe I got it twisted.
Yeah. So well, she hasn't gotten back to me yet, but we're trying to get the burglary special crime unit. So we're trying. If we can't get Justin, then we'll get somebody else. But April's still far out, so.
Yeah, tonight it is.
Yeah. On the moon here.
So we're really appreciate everybody who's been responding. And if you know other people who want to come to our meetings, please invite them to do so as well.
Yeah, thank you, Marge. Thank you. And a shout out to Marge and to Wendy and to all of you. We hope we get more volunteers because when I started a year ago, it was just me. And then Marge and Wendy stepped up and they wanted to help out. And we're growing. So with more people, we can do more things. Mm-hmm. I wanted to say something else. Oh, I wanted to ask, how many are new here? Anybody new? Okay, everyone's, wow, nobody new. How many get the crime digests? Everybody get the crime? Wow, that's great. Okay, the crime digests are very helpful, good communication between us. And how many here are crime victims? Anybody crime victims? Okay, yeah. Got a few. Not many. I was expecting more. Because, you know, it's sort of like, you know, if you're a tornado spotter, a lot of tornado people, they've experienced storms and they believe in tornadoes because they've seen them. And so crime is kind of like that. A lot of people go through life, they don't ever anticipate running into crime, and they're kind of oblivious to it. So hats off to you who haven't been a crime victim, but you're here because you know.
Or how many have lived right next to or across the street from a crime victim.
They had a bigger response. Thank you. So that's how you're aware. Okay.
Steve, well, I have a question. What's the difference between the crime digest and the crime reports or crime alerts?
Well, the crime digest is a weekly thing that goes out, kind of like a summary of what we what happened over the week.
And that's not from you?
Yes, it's from me.
Okay.
Wendy helps me with that.
Oh, okay.
But it's from me. You'll see my section, and there's Steve's part. And then the crime alerts are actually crime that's happening within the neighborhood within the last 24 hours. Mm-hmm. I send those out right away. So those are real high priorities. So we try to get that out as fast as possible if there's crime going on.
Well, and I signed up for something else, and I don't know if I got it off of your site or not, but it's you can put a radius on from your address.
Yeah,
and that comes,
spot crime.
Yeah, that comes way too often.
Yeah, it depends on what crimes you're watching, yeah.
I think it's Crime Reports.
Crime Reports is
everybody
one.
Everybody has different preferences, so you can't please everybody.
Yeah. Oh, no. I just wanted to make sure I was getting the digest, which is more specific to what's going on in our neighborhood.
Very specific to our neighborhood, yeah.
Yes, definitely.
I just picked someplace on Seiko Road, somewhere in the middle, so I get an 1 mile radius all around. Yeah. It's not where I live, but it's perfect for that 1 mile radius. So, yes, Dustin.
Before I actually come up and say anything, I just kind of want to address that before I forget. Those are great tools, obviously, knowing things before. You're going to hear probably anything from Steve if it's a direct email from there or anything specifically from the police department. As far as a press release or anything, that sort of it's a bigger thing. One thing to bear in mind, and I've kind of realized this through my communication with Steve when he's asking about certain incidents that happen, that a lot of times those things pull just generally what we get called to on the street. So. Just realize that it could be something that comes out as a theft from auto because there's someone that's standing around a vehicle or maybe trying to get into a vehicle. If we show up to something, and this routinely happens when we're policing on the street, show up to something, hey, I locked my keys in the car, I'm trying to get my keys out of the car, okay, do you have an ID? Yep, okay, we can check that versus the registered owner. That may still go into the system as a theft from auto, but that would be something that I would probably clear without a report saying this was a check person. I was positively able to identify the person that was out there. They matched the registered owner of the vehicle, assisted them in getting their keys out, and off they went. So just because you're receiving things from that, and multiple times a day, I'm sure, because there's thousands of calls for service, just understanding that what's on the surface there maybe sent to you isn't specifically what it ends up being at the end of the day. I know we've had that with burglaries and things in the past, too, where it says burglary, well, here's something at the back door, and maybe it was someone trying the back door handle, but, no signs of forced entry, anything of that sort. We're just doing a quick check property report. It's not actually a burglary.
Right.
There's things that do get miscoded. Dispatch tries to do their best sending it out there, but that's the reason we go to investigate at the end of the day is to figure out what's going on. So just understand that everything that's coming out there that might sound dire isn't necessarily specifically what it is.
And actually, that ends up being more truth than anything because before I send out the alerts, I try to get in touch with Dustin, and when he says it was nothing or, it was just somebody trying to get in their own house, I don't even send out the alert if I can't try to avoid it. That said, there was a house that a neighbor had called about asking you to check on. It was a vacant house. They asked because they were afraid, there had been some things going on in the neighborhood, and they wanted to make sure nobody was living in this vacant house. So Dustin went there at night, and he's checking the house out. And the neighbor saw him, but didn't know he was a police officer, and called the police. So in the system, there's a report of a prowler.
That's
good. That was good. That was really a great example of community policing working with the police together.
And on that note, I was happy to hear it. I would hope if someone's checking my neighbor's house with a flashlight, whether they know it's a cop or not, they're giving a call to 911. I definitely appreciate it.
That was a great example. And that leads me right to you, Dustin. I mean, what we can do now is kind of, there's been some crime in the area or some things going on in the area that Dustin's going to share with us. And then from there, we're going to lead to kind of an open discussion if you have questions. And if we want to get into anything more, like how do you identify suspects, how do you remember license plates or any of that kind of thing, we can get into that more. It was something we had talked about doing one day, but we never got to do it because, we've been kind of busy with other things. But, it's up to you and what everybody else wants to do. So thank you. And then after Dustin, we have Deanna, and hopefully, we can get Deanna in here 15 minutes before 8 or earlier.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dustin.
Didn't see any hands for new people here, but in case it didn't match up with times that I've made neighborhood meetings, my name is Dustin Paling. I've been working for the police department for about 4 years now. I work predominantly in this area, Midvale Heights, kind of down to Schrader Road area. Through this next year, we're changing shifts at the end of January. Happy to say that I'm staying in this area on the same shift and everything. Think of me as a resource. If you don't have any direct information for contact for me, feel free to get a hold of Steve. I keep in pretty regular contact with him. So, sorry, I'm not the canine unit. I know that's disappointing. even for me, I can't hope to live up to that. I also apologize. I wasn't able to make it last time around. I was on duty that time. Like Steve said, I had a call for service. The chief was here. I also can't live up to that. So, I just want to talk real briefly about some of the theft from autos that are going on, and then I'm happy to answer questions pertaining to that or to anything else that you guys might want to talk about. We have seen an uptick in theft from autos. We would just classify that as entry to a locked or unlocked vehicle with either things that are rummaged around or things that are taken out of the vehicle. So that uptick hasn't specifically been within Midvale Heights, hasn't specifically been on the west side, kind of all over the city. As to specifically why that's happening, I guess I can't put my finger on any one thing. The only thing I can say is there's very easy ways to protect yourself from being a victim of theft from auto. The great majority of these reports that we're seeing are unlocked vehicles that are entered. That includes on the street, in the driveway, in the garage. What I can tell you is the easiest way to stop that is obviously to lock your vehicle. That including on the street. Yes, ma'am?
Just a note, double check that your doors are actually locked. People found out that her daughter's car got broken into because the clicker didn't work. She was thinking she was locking her car, and she wasn't. It was not actually working. So the old-fashioned way of actually pulling on the handle is probably a good idea.
I would agree with that point. Definitely good to check those sorts of things, make sure the batteries and the keyless remotes are working, things of that sort. So locking your vehicle if they're on the street, in the driveway, even in your garage. You know, you leave a back door to a garage open, you forget that you left it open because you're outside doing yard work. Leave the vehicle open in the garage. They might not be entering the house or forcing entry to the garage, but go in and remove things from the vehicles. We do see that from time to time. So just being a little more conscientious about locking your vehicle. The other thing I would say is keeping high-value items, electronics, purses, wallets, things of that sort, out of plain view, so that anyone that's walking by that looks into your vehicle doesn't see a purse sitting there, doesn't see an iPad sitting on the seat, things of that sort. So keeping those things out of plain view, either securing under the seat, in the trunk, better yet, in the house or somewhere else. I know that's not practical 100% of the time, but keeping those items at least out of plain view. On those same notes, not keeping spare keys in the car. A lot of people keep spare keys in the car. I can think of very few instances where that would be beneficial. If you lock your keys in the car, both sets are in the car. But there has been instances of people leaving the vehicle open. There's a spare set of keys in the car, and then vehicle's gone. So just a reminder on that front, having a spare set of keys is a great thing to have, but some other secure location outside of the vehicle for that would be preferred. Along those lines, and I know I talked about it when I talked about some of the burglary issues that were going on that I'm happy to say are a lot less frequent than they were when we first started meeting. If you do have electronics that you keep in the car a lot of the time, whether that be personal laptop, business laptop, iPods, even your cell phone if you leave your phone in the car sometimes when you're doing errands, things of that sort, to write down the serial numbers or, better yet, take pictures of the serial numbers and all identifying information. If that does go missing, items are removed, things of that sort, it's a lot easier for you to document that for insurance purposes. It's also easier for us when we're doing a report to put those in identifying characteristics into the computer, and then if someone tries to sell them, pawn them, things of that sort, we will get an alert that someone's trying to do that, and that can help us with asset recovery for things that might be taken after the fact. So those are all good things. Other than that, I can't think of anything specifically on that front. Just again, using the common sense, you know, I'm going to lock my vehicle. Unfortunately, these days, you can't trust everybody that's walking around no matter where you're at. So that's my two cents on that. Happy to answer any questions on that. Yes, ma'am?
So my next door neighbor generally parks his car in his driveway, and I'm saying, you know, you should keep it locked. It's been locked. But he purposely leaves it unlocked. He knows people have been in it. He's worried about them breaking his window. So do you see that often? Do they bother locked cars still?
And I can say I've heard that specifically from other people. Why lock my car if there's something in there, someone's going to break the window? Mm-hmm. I can't sit up here and tell you 100% of the time if you leave your car locked, nobody's going to get into your car. Obviously, mm-hmm. where there's a will, there's a way. If people want to break in to grab stuff, they're going to break in to grab stuff. What I can tell you is in that instance and instances of locking the vehicle, as I stated before, just not keeping valuable items, and there's your easiest ticket to that. One caution I would say on that front, I've had two, I think, in the last 6 months, of people that had older style vehicles that were stolen without the keys in there. We made one arrest. The other one, I'm not sure we did or didn't. Both situations, we're not sure how they removed the vehicle from the scene. whether they had a master key for some of the vehicles. Some of the manufacturers make master keys that are held at different dealerships and things of that sort, if they have possession of that. If there's still a way that they're hot wiring the car, things of that sort, but their vehicle did go missing. Again, not to say that someone's not going to break the window and doing it, but I would say that's one more hurdle to someone that might be checking car doors, things of that sort. So.
But roughly what percentage of the time do you see where people break windows trying to get in? Is that not
I don't like to cite anything that's wrong, so I don't really want to put a percentage on it. But I would say, at least from my personal experience of showing up to calls, that, again, not capturing everything. Some things come in through self-report. Some don't get reported. I would say it's a neighborhood of 95.5. 95% of the time it's someone leaving the car open, they're making entry, whether on purpose or forgetting to lock or key fob not working, things of that sort, versus 5% people actually breaking the window. So I don't want to say it doesn't happen, but the great majority of the time, mm-hmm. car locks, your best way to protect yourself.
Right. I'll keep encouraging him.
I did a little investigation into how people can steal a car, that's locked and whatever. Because my daughter lives in Milwaukee, and there's just been a rash of car thefts in Milwaukee. And it sounds like Dodge vehicles, some of the older Dodge, especially Dodge Caravans, that somehow they're able to hotwire it or something. So those were going pretty quickly. When I went to visit her, I actually bought one of those clubs. I don't know, if you recommend those, but put it on my steering wheel because I was parked on the street overnight. And they're kind of hard to find in town. You can buy them on the internet. I found it out at Advance in Verona. But just locks onto your steering wheel, and they can't, if they hotwire it, they can't turn the steering wheel. So.
Yes, I would say each and every barrier you can put up towards them not taking the vehicle is great. I would say those are good. Again, I realize that costs money. I always err on the side, and I've talked about this too, with the burglaries with home alarm systems. I don't mean to discourage that. That's great. They have a lot of positives, but there are negatives as far as false alarms. It does cost you money. There's a lot of things you can do free of cost to protect yourself and protect your belongings, including locking vehicles, taking things out of there that are valuable. But I would say each and everything that you put in place to help prevent things of that sort is only going to benefit you. Unfortunately, we don't have a way of measuring that someone looks in, sees a club on the car, and walks away instead of breaking in. No way to measure that, that deterred crime. I would say that's a good thing, too. Mm-hmm. So, and luckily we're not Milwaukee. I love Milwaukee to death, but definitely not the same there as here. So.
I don't know if it was reported or not, but someone on Charles Lane had a window smashed on their Tundra, and they stole some sort of a battery charger.
Okay.
So, did you hear about that at all?
I can't say off the top of my head. I specifically heard that circumstance.
It must have happened rather recently, because she told us about it, and I think they're all trying to keep their porch lights on, because there were two lamp lights and motion detectors, and they still did it. So they're not sure if he was targeted, if they were looking for a newer vehicle, thinking there's a GPS unit in there or something, but it was a rather costly, some sort of battery charger, quick charge thing. So.
Sure.
Yeah, they do break windows.
Yes, yep, and we have heard of that. I don't know if that specifically happened or was reported that I can recall. I'm not sure, depending on what was taken, whether that would go to self-report or actually to a police officer, just depending, and this is all through dispatch protocols, mm-hmm. as far as what goes to self-report, depending on suspect information, value of the items taken, things of that sort. Another possibility is, I don't know if this happened overnight or not.
I believe it was.
Okay, so depending on when they decide to call, I get into work at 3. There's people working during the day. I know the day shift does get a great deal more than we do, because people mm-hmm. wake up, they go out to their car, yeah. window's broken or unlocked door, they've rifled through the car. They're the ones getting those reports versus us. There's things that I hear about just by talking to people, but there are things I miss too. So I guess to that specific circumstance, I'm not sure if I heard about it or not, but yeah, unfortunately, it does happen. You can protect yourself as best you can, but again, if there's a will, there's a way. If people want to break the window, they're going to break the window, unfortunately.
And with lights or without?
Mm-hmm. Yep. But I can say, it increases your chances with motion lights and things of that sort. Mm-hmm. If it's dark lit and someone comes up during the night, even if there's not many people up, the chances of someone seeing them out there, not good. Maybe neighbor's up getting a glass of water, here goes motion light, they look out the window, there's someone by the vehicle, they give us a call. I'm just trying to think of some incident where that would, motion sensor lights are great. Keeping car in driveway versus on street, if possible, is great. In garage, even better, things of that sort. So, yes. Yes, sir?
Yeah, Has anybody had any problems with a stray electronic signal opening an automatic garage door?
Way beyond my level of expertise. I guess I can't answer that. What I can tell you is, and I don't think we've had any recently, going back to the unlocked vehicle sitting in driveway, is people don't even realize someone's went into their vehicle and they take garage door opener out, come back a couple days later, open garage, into the house they go when no one's home. So obviously you're going to keep your garage door opener in your car, so just another good reason to keep your door locked and be conscientious about what things are in there regularly and where they're at, realizing if something like that's gone. We did see that, but as far as the stray electronic signal, I guess I can't specifically speak to that or if I've heard it before.
Check to see if you can change the code on your garage door. Do you have whatever, go see Home Depot or somebody, see if they can help you.
Well, I called the overhead garage door company, and they just poo-pooed it.
Really?
No, they can, because kids used to go along the streets and see what they can open up. Now they're so high-tech that there's somebody, is it Kaler or Gaylor, at, she at the South District, she's really knows her IT stuff.
There's a couple people in our department, and that's the beauty of having a department of our size and a lot of really well-trained and different backgrounds of people, is I'm okay computer-wise and things of that sort, but I wouldn't call myself a techie. There's definitely people that know that stuff up and down. So,
South District, and talk to that lieutenant. It's a woman. She's really high-tech person.
Nothing has been touched in the garage, so I don't believe anybody has entered, and I know I close it at night.
Sure.
I go back and check it a couple times now, make sure it's closed. Yeah, when I get up in the morning, occasionally, it's open.
If you, if there's something, if you can find a book or something for your, on the internet or whatever, to see if you can change the code.
Well, that's what I thought. That's why I called the overhead door company.
Or they're too lazy.
Sorry, I don't have a better answer to that question.
I just thought I'd bring it up in case anybody else was having that problem. I heard of, you know, stray electronic charges, so I wasn't surprised, but I was surprised at the response.
Well, it happened in my particular family that the garage door opener that we got at another location, we could open my in-laws. So it happens.
Right.
There were an awful lot of break-ins in Green Tree and Orchard Ridge, like right around, right before Christmas and right after Christmas. We're talking like almost 20, you know, got up to almost 20. Were those, are there any leads on any of those? Do you think they're the same people doing similar stuff, or is this a whole bunch of people? Or
I can tell you based on experience, the majority of the time, I wouldn't say it's one single person going around, but generally people that tend to do that tend to do it in more than one spot, just based on my previous investigations. I would say there's been a lot of positives and one smaller negative of this burglary crime unit. Grand scheme of things, it's been awesome because they can look at all of these things at once to see are there common patterns or the things of that sort. They're looking at shoe wear impression between different areas when there's been stuff either left on doors or in the snow and things of that sort to kind of piece these things together. I can tell you that there's been a lot of patterns that have been developed between some of the most recent burglaries. That one small negative I was talking about is unfortunately now with the burglary crime unit kind of dealing with all of that instead of individual detectives within the West District, is I don't get to hear quite as much information on the street. So I feel a little more out of tune, as do my coworkers, with some of the things that are going on as far as ongoing investigation. But as far as benefit to the investigation itself and things of that sort, this burglary crime unit's just been spectacular. I would say if it's something you're concerned about, which you should be because it's nearby to your neighborhood and things of that sort, Steve has the information for Justine. I know she's been very receptive to answering questions and things of that sort. She works within that unit. I'm sure she'd be happy to answer questions that she can, understanding that any open investigation, she may not be able to shed tons of light onto what's going on or who maybe we're looking at or things of that sort. So I guess that's the best I can answer that. Steve, did you have a question?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, any updates on the new police station yet? Have they come up with a plan for when it'll be up and running?
Yep, I don't want to misquote the dates here, but I know it was approved through the last either common or city council meeting. We had our in-service yesterday. They were saying they're planning to break ground here in 2016 at some point. As far as the timeline from there, I'm not sure. I know that kind of ebbs and flows with the whole annexation of the town and things of that sort, too.
The town of Madison.
It's kind of well above my pay grade as well as far as decisions being made in that respect. But I hear it is more or less on track, more so than it was before when it kind of didn't pass that first council meeting and kind of got rebrought back into the budget and things of that sort. So I hear it is progressing forward. Every once in a while we'll get emails with, hey, what do you want this to look like within the PD and things of that sort. So I can tell you they're making progress with that respect, even if they haven't quite broken ground yet. Okay. But I think that is set to take place later this year. So.
Good. Yep. On another note, I was planning to be out of town for 8 days. I called Madison Newspapers about 3 or 4 days before I left to interrupt delivery. There was a recorded message. It didn't go through. And, you know, you're advertising if there's a pile of newspapers in front of your door. I did call them, and I did speak to a person and told them that the system failed.
Yeah, I would say that's a huge concern, because that would be one of my recommendations if you're leaving town, is to let your neighbors know. Go to our website. There's a vacation watch entry under there that you can put your address, how long you're going to be gone for. Those come directly to our email now. So that everybody working within that area knows if someone's going to be out of town for an extended period of time, we can keep an eye on there. We have contact information should anything happen at the house. And we would tell you to stop your mail, stop your newspaper, things of that sort. I would say a good backup to that is if you have a neighbor on either side or two houses down, and let them know, hey, here's what's supposed to be happening. I'm not supposed to be getting mail. I'm not supposed to be getting newspapers. And even if they're checking in every 2 days, every 3 days, and they see a pile building up, at least they can go scoop those, put those away, and then give them to you.
What happened, my next-door neighbor came over. He wanted to know who I was using for the snow removal, because he was going to be gone at the same time.
Sure, yep. And I know that's a lot of it. It's definitely vacation season. If I didn't have to be here right now, I wouldn't be, because it's really cold out. So, yes, absolutely. But, you know, if you have friends, family, neighbors, things of that sort, just kind of as a backup to that, I would be dissatisfied, too, if I did everything I had to call the newspaper company and they didn't follow through on their end. I think I'd be placing another phone call, too, after the fact. So.
Yeah. I've had a lot of trouble with a carrier who would sporadically leave things when we said not to deliver. And finally got in touch with the circulation manager at the Wisconsin State Journal, who did help me out, and the news carrier eventually was changed.
Mm-hmm.
But they told me that when you do get through on that automated system or talk to somebody, they're in Montana or someplace, Idaho or someplace. Yes. They're not local at all. So it doesn't seem to work as it's intended. Having a backup locally is
the newspapers are really struggling, and they're short-staffed.
Yes, they're very short-staffed, and the delivery is short-staffed too.
Your call is very important to us.
Yes.
Please stay on the line.
I give them credit for continuing to publish. I like my paper,
but everything is outsourced.
Anyway, thank you for letting me interject that.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate the insight. Question in the back.
I have a comment about newspapers. I call them, but I never call until the day before I leave. Because they're much better about right then. But I'm really efficient at call early. It gets confused.
But if you wait too long, they say, oh, well, it's already processed or whatever.
Well, I've also been pretty good about saying, you can do it. Hang on.
Yes.
I did have another question about the police department's online notification that you're away. Is that for lengthy periods, a week or more, or is that for a few days? What do you like to...
I don't think that there's anything on there as to a minimum number of days. on that. At least the last time I looked, I think it was just a free forum that this is a vacation watch, this is how many days I'm going to be gone.
Yeah, there's nothing on the forum that indicates.
Yeah, so I would say even if you're out of town for the weekend and your neighbors are gone or something of that sort and you want us to keep an eye, absolutely.
Okay.
Like I said, it comes through on all of our emails and it's almost a threaded email of everything within the areas that we're responsible for. So it's all within one email that keeps updating towards the front of my email. So I know I'm conscientious about, okay, like this number of people are gone. If calls for service permit, I'm over there at least driving around, if not getting out on foot and checking. But I would say, yeah, I mean, if you're going to be gone for a couple of days and you're concerned about it, absolutely just submit that. I don't think it can hurt. So.
Seems like a lot of extra responsibility for the local officer.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, it's not one of those always or never things. If we're really busy, it's not like we're going to be out there on foot going around every single house. But again, like I said, at least it lets us know that, okay, the homeowner's not home if something does happen. And that's outside of the realm of crime. I think we talked about this before. I think maybe Chief had brought it up a while back that there had been a pipe that burst at somebody's house and they were out of town, and luckily they'd left their information with the neighbors and we knew they were out of town to be able to get in there with a spare key instead of the police department kicking the door, or the fire department kicking the door down to try to turn the water off and things of that sort. So there are other benefits outside of the crime realm of things, that just knowing that you're out of town with a contact and things of that sort, it's definitely beneficial on our end.
Did somebody do that to the neighbor?
Yeah.
Did they ever catch that person that did that?
No, not that I'm aware of. You mean the person who turned down the first
yeah.
Polls? No, I haven't heard anything about that.
Jeez. Speaking of burst pipes, if you have an outdoor faucet and you leave your hose on there, you're going to get a break inside your house.
Yeah.
The pipe's going to freeze inside. Because my brother did that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I did that too. First-hand experience.
I was going to say lessons learned through first-hand experience, unfortunately, on a lot of that stuff. So definitely good to remember with the weather cooling off. So.
I witnessed something about 4 or 5 months ago that I think I had heard of, but directly across the street from me, an SUV pulled into my neighbor's driveway, and it looked pretty much like their Jeep Grand Cherokee, so I didn't think much of it. But then a person got out of the car, looked into their living room window, got back in the car, drove away, not knowing that they perhaps had somebody authorized to watch their property because they were away. I didn't know if they were away. I wasn't able to make positive contact with them until the following day. That was my reason for not calling the police at the time.
Mm-hmm.
They confirmed the following day that indeed they did not authorize anybody to look after their property. Is that a trendy thing? People fishing for something to take, or?
I would say that people do case things, whether that be going through neighborhoods to see which people aren't home, things of that sort. Looking in the window, absolutely. Looking at cars, which car door handles are unlocked, things of that sort, absolutely.
It was like 10:30 or 11 at night, and they were home and they were asleep.
Yep. The two things I would say is I would always err on the side of caution to call something like that in. Does that mean that's going to lead to us contacting them? Not necessarily, but if they pull in your neighbor's driveway and then they go down two blocks and do the same thing, and you had called in 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, I'm sure there's not that much traffic on the road. Hey, there's this Jeep Cherokee that's just pulled into my neighbor's driveway, so on and so forth. And we get over there and there's one up and down the streets and it's the only car there, and we can make positive contact, figure out what's going on. I mean, we just don't know where that's going to lead. If it ends up being we get there and vehicle's not there, well, then we don't make contact. It's kind of we're sitting in the same spot we were if you wouldn't have called. If we make contact because they're stopped at the stop sign and someone's around the corner and they're like, I know these people, I'm supposed to be here checking on their stuff. Well, that's a story that we can easily get a hold of someone, you know. Mm-hmm. What's their name? What's their phone number? Okay, I'll give them a call to figure out and make sure this is legit. Hi, are you the resident here? You know, things of that sort, we can kind of go to investigate from there. So I'd say err on the side of caution and call. I know that can be difficult to do sometimes, but we'd rather hear about it than not. If nothing else, for documentation purposes too, you know. Maybe you call and someone else had called in a suspicious Jeep that had been cruising around the neighborhood, you know, day two before, or lo and behold, there is a burglary and that scene leaving the area. We know that they were there casing it, and maybe someone wrote down a license plate from a previous contact. You just never really know where that can lead. So not to second guess, but definitely I'd call.
Yeah.
Err on the side of caution.
I'm not shy about going outside to get a license plate, but it all happened too quickly.
Yeah, no, I can understand that too. So.
That's the thing, and that leads right to a real good topic is, you know, when you see something, sometimes you don't realize that a crime is being committed because you don't know. And how can we encourage people to just do what you're saying, call 911?
Yep.
Can you give some examples of some suspicious activities that would...
Yep. And I know I've said this before. You guys, rest easy, do not have to decide whether it's a crime or not. They've tasked us with that responsibility that we come investigate, decide whether it's a crime or not. On top of that, I would say call for suspicious activity. To me, that makes tons of sense, but that might not necessarily make sense to you guys just because that's the lexicon we've been given through our training, something that's suspicious. What I would say is that if you see vehicles that don't belong in your neighborhood, if you see something that seems off, somebody driving up and down the block a bunch of times, if you see people walking around looking in vehicles, I would classify that as suspicious. Just anything that gives you that feeling that something might not be right here, and there could be a completely legitimate explanation for why these people, vehicles, circumstances are going on. Again, luckily that's not something that you guys necessarily have to decide on. You can give us a call. We're happy to make a contact. If everything checks out at the end of the day, great. You know, hey, I'm out walking my dog. Hey, you know, whatever else, this is the way I take from here to there. Again, we have training experience in talking to people, figuring out if they're lying or not, because a lot of people lie to cops, believe it or not. but just doing an investigation, and I think a lot of times we think investigation leads to crime, investigation leads to arrest. There are numerous investigations on a daily basis that we investigate, and at the end of the day, the circumstance leading up to it's completely legitimate. My previous example about people trying to get into their car to get their keys out, again, is that something that looks suspicious or out of the ordinary when you're looking out your window? Yes. Is that something I'd hoped everybody would call on if they saw? Yes. Again, I'm checking neighbor's house with a flashlight. You don't know I'm a cop. You see someone checking the house. I'd hope each and every time you're calling that, hey, there's this suspicious person out there. Again, lo and behold, at the end of the day, it's the person getting their keys out of their car that they locked in there, or actual police officer walking around the property to check the property. But again, without the phone call, we don't know what's going on because it does run to the other end of that spectrum where it is something that's criminal or people looking to do wrongdoing, things of that sort. So I would just say if it doesn't look right, absolutely call about it. The more details you can take down, the better. But again, if you don't have a license plate, if you don't have a great description, at the end of the day, depending on what's being reported, we're probably at least going to come check the area. Is that going to be instantaneous? It might be if we're around the corner not doing anything. If we're really busy and there's, you know, burglary and a shooting and a domestic going on at the same time, it might take us a bit to get over there and check the area. But, you know, at some point in time, someone's going to at least drive through and make sure everything's okay over there. If you are apprehensive about calling because you don't want to give your information, you can call and report stuff anonymously. We get tons of that. If you're just willing to leave your phone number and say, hey, if anything comes of this, I'd be happy to talk to an officer. But, you know, if they don't find anything, I just don't really want to be involved. People call anonymously with a phone number a lot of times, too. And, you know, again, if we find out it is something criminal and need further information, we can give you a call. If you want to be completely anonymous and just not involved, you just see something that doesn't look right, again, we're happy to do that, too. We can suffice to figure out what's going on and arrive at an eventual end either way. So,
One of the things that you had mentioned is descriptions. Is there a trick to memorizing license plate numbers or descriptions of suspicious people, something that can help us to do that job?
Sure. I can say if your memory is anything like mine, I need to write things down. So if you just leave a notepad somewhere, you know, towards your front door, towards your window, places that you look out, if that's somewhere you're going to be seeing things, keeping pen and piece of paper in the car so that, you know, you or someone else, car crash, other car takes off, you can write down the license plate, because even in that time with millions of things going on before you pick up the phone and call 911, having that written down is going to be a lot more accurate than trying to remember. I know some people's memory is way better than mine, but if I don't write it down, I'm going to forget it probably within seconds. So I would say writing stuff down is great. I would say, you know, the more specific the description, the better, but don't get hung up on that. I would say, you know, if you see someone and you have, you know, male or female, if you can tell, race, if you can tell, and just a brief clothing description is going to be, you know, as good as being like, okay, you know, brown hair, glasses, and then they're gone before you get anything else. Just, you know, something general that might stick out as far as clothing color, again, age, gender, race is going to help us in the long run with that. So I know that's not a perfect answer probably for what you're asking, but just something's better than nothing. Again, you know, that phone call with, well, I could tell it was a kid, I couldn't tell if it was a male or a female, was trying this car door and didn't get in, but I saw them walking that way. Again, you never know. If we're around the corner and that's the only person that's there and they're, you know, 12, 13-year-old kid, that's going to make a lot of sense to us too. So I wouldn't get so hung up with, you know, I need a head-to-toe description of this person with exactly what they're wearing before I need to call if I saw something suspicious. I, again, would say err on the side of caution. Any information is better than no information. Any call to us, no matter how benign it might seem at the time, you just never know what else is going on in the area. So I know we recently, and it was a day that I was not working, had an attempted burglary off of Cameron Drive, potentially, or somewhere south of Midvale Heights down there where a neighbor had called because someone was in the neighbor's yard. Lo and behold, he had done two or three burglaries prior to that and one other attempted within that same neighborhood. So something that's as benign as, okay, I thought I saw someone cutting through my neighbor's yard and now they're standing in the backyard, might not seem like a big deal at the time, but again, I think this day too was one of those colder days where it was snowing and there's not a lot of people out in the backyard. It might seem like, okay, this is something pretty small, but again, you know, with that comes documentation and positive context for us to figuring out who you are, where you're coming from. We need no burden of proof to get to that. If you're walking down the street, I can have a consensual contact with someone and ask for what your name is and what explanation for what you're doing. If it's even more suspicious, again, you're in a backyard and it's not your backyard, that gives us a little more ability to say, what's going on here? I need to positively identify this person before we kick them loose. But again, that's the onus for that is on us. If you see something that doesn't look right, no matter how simple it may seem, it never hurts to call. Again, it could be something that ends up being legitimate, or it could be something else. That's kind of for us to get there and investigate, and we're happy to do it because that's our job. So,
no, thank you.
I've seen several instances of what I thought was a potential drug deal going on in the cops parking lot, Walgreens parking lot. You know, somebody come into a vehicle, they kind of look around. You know, should we try to get a description of the car? Individuals call 911 right away.
Can't hurt. The two things on that is I can say it will be triaged by dispatch when you call. So if it's two vehicles that already left the area, and again, there's another call coming in for a 911 disconnect where there's a disturbance in the background and we have several other officers tied up on other things, it may not mean that someone's headed straight there to take care of that. What I can tell you is that the more information you can provide, even if you want to do it anonymously, again, you don't necessarily know where there may be a police officer or things of that sort. I know different neighborhood, I can just recall this from a month ago, same sort of deal, people had seen two cars pull up, they only got one license plate, they had called it in. One of my coworkers was right around the corner, literally had seen the vehicle coming out there, it looked a little suspicious to him, right as he's getting a call from a concerned citizen that said, hey, I think I might have seen a hand-to-hand drug deal over here, here's one of the license plates. He would have had to look for a traffic stop or something of that sort to legally stop that vehicle. With that tip right there is enough for him to stop the vehicle and started, you know, investigating it on basis of a drug investigation. So I can tell you that, yes, those are going to be triaged below the domestic that's going on, the verbal argument, the retail theft in progress, you know, what have you, just within the world of dispatch. Again, not anything you guys have to worry about. Just picking up the phone and calling is really all you have to do. I would still suggest calling that in because it's things we want to know about. Kind of to that other end of maybe that doesn't result in anything, but there may be something else that we're working. It might be that our community policing team knows that there's a great deal of drug deals going on in this area, and now they have one license plate belonging to someone that's frequent in there that they buy there the majority of the time, and that can kind of lead them to further investigation. So again, you know, we like to document things. We like to know what's going on, that even if it doesn't lead to a contact, an arrest, anything of that sort in that moment, It is information that we'd prefer to know.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because Walgreens has signs saying there's video surveillance in the parking lot,
So that's another great point is everybody's surveillance cameras are different. If we don't contact someone where we go pull the video from there, I would say that's probably impractical to think that each and every time that there's a suspicious vehicle, a drug deal, something of that sort, we're going to be able to pull a video. I would say, though, again, that, if something else had happened there, or maybe there's a drug deal and then, there's a drug rip where there ends up being a shooting or something of that sort, that's at least a timestamp that we have there that we can go look for video. Everybody's video is different. Some of it's really good to the point where you can see license plates and things of that sort. So, again, you just never know what investigative tools may or may not be there. We always suggest that you call in. Before I get to some of these other questions, I just want to throw this back out here. I know the chief said it 100 million times. You guys are taxpayers, so don't be shy about calling 911. Don't think, okay, I got to scramble for the non-emergency number. If it's something that can wait and you have that time, hey, I have a question about this, or hey, I saw this 20 minutes ago, it's not going on anymore, fine to use the non-emergency number, but when in doubt, dial 911. You guys all pay great taxes. That's one of the services that you guys pay for, so don't be bashful about calling 911. It all goes through the same call center. If you pick up, one of the first questions you're going to get is, where is this occurring? As they get through their progression of questioning within the first 30 seconds, they're going to be able to triage whether it's something that's ongoing and is an emergency. There's someone choking, there's two people fighting, there's something of that sort. Or if, hey, I just saw this happen 15 minutes ago, they will send you the other operator that's on the non-emergency line. It all goes through the same call center. So while we were talking about that, I just kind of want to put that out there one more time. So.
Okay, they call in. How does it get, if they, put it low priority and after an hour it's gone from the queue, there may be a pattern of other people calling in. How does it get to somebody to take a look at it? There's the drug force number, by the way, if you see it a lot, you can call them. After, in addition to calling dispatch as well as this community policing team in the West District to let them know. Mike Hansen is also the lieutenant of patrol now, if you let him know on the side after you call dispatch. You're seeing it frequently. But yeah, how do you this get into the crime analyst thing that,
Great question. I always think of things in this idealistic manner, like I've been talking. There are calls that get missed. There's going to be calls to 911 where they're going to say, okay, there's no vehicle, there's no suspect information. It either gets cleared out before it even gets to us by dispatch. There's not a whole heck of a lot the police department can do about that. There's going to be other things where an anonymous caller said they saw two vehicles. One's described as a green vehicle. Because it calls for service, we've held it for 40 minutes. Literally, we probably won't take a drive through at that point in time. So there are things that are going to get called. What I can tell you is, although we are switching every year, we have enough people working in areas consistently to kind of know how trends are. So one phone call gets missed here or there, two phone calls get missed here or there. Yes, very real possibility. Now, if I'm working there every day of my shift for a whole year and it's a constant problem outside of the same area, same vehicle description, same things of that sort, I'm going to try to address that when I can. I'm going to use more proactive resources like you referred to, our community policing team, to say, hey, it seems like there's a lot of short-term drug trafficking going on in this area. Is it something you guys want to take a look at? And since they're not calls for service driven, they don't, dispatch says there's a disturbance going on here, go to this. They're way more proactive about during their 8-hour shift, they're out there, they're doing drug work, they're going to community meetings, they're doing other things of that sort. Might be something that they want to take a look at. So, again, yes, not every call is going to get captured, not every single thing is going to make it to our ears, not every single thing is even going to get a drive-through. But again, if it's not called in, we're sitting in the same spot. So, again, when in doubt, I think just if you see something suspicious or something you believe to be a drug deal, definitely give us a call.
They'll probably come back. They tend to use the same parking lots. And they'll even do it in front of the police office in Meadowood. They got a big drug bust. And they will continue to do it. That's just the way they are. They think they can get away with it. And they know they can get away with the way the Dane County system works. So.
How long have the officers been... I've noticed there's been officers in the afternoon stationed at the bus transfer points. Is that a new proactive thing, or is that And is that making a difference in your eyes, or what's the process?
Yeah, so transfer point's actually within my area of responsibility, too. The West transfer point by Tokay and Whitney over there.
We had a lot of issues in this neighborhood. It seemed like that's where they were heading and then leaving. Is that, you think that's helped, or is that a...
Yeah, so it's a newer, I don't know specifically where the money's coming from, and I wish I could recall specifically here, but it's some state-funded grant for us to be there proactively to have a police officer at the transfer point. I can say that's great for a lot of different things. I definitely working in the same area can notice a difference between days when they are there, days when they weren't, the times when they weren't before and they are now, just as far as a number of different things, disturbances going on over there, people that like to take stuff from Walgreens, cops, things of that sort, and then use the bus routes to get back, more quality of life issues, people drinking out there, swearing, things of that sort. I think, at least in my mind, I have been able to tell a huge difference. So, yeah, that is something. Unfortunately, we can't have someone out there 24/7. That's just impractical. So the majority of the time, I think they work like 3 p.m. to 7 p.m., which is the high traffic times for people on the buses and things of that sort. So, yeah, we've seen a huge difference with that. Metro just installed new camera systems out there, too. The cameras are very, very good. So as far as backtracking things that happen after the fact, as long as it's in range of the cameras within that either shelter area or within the actual buses themselves, that's been very helpful, too. So, yeah, I think that's been a very positive thing, too, is having someone out there almost every day, 3 to 7. So.
Do you think it'll help with the new Midtown station being a little closer to that point?
I would definitely say, definitely say call for service times for a lot of stuff in that area. The unfortunate reality, and I'm sure you've heard the chief say it a number of times, is if you're on the far side of the West District and everybody's pulled south, it's going to be a good 15 to 20 minutes. You know, if it's something that's urgent, we can go there, lights and siren, obviously way less than that, but that'll be the nice thing about this Midtown District is just the coverage and response times to different areas is going to be greatly beneficial from there. So just as far as not even where the physical station is at, but just the parameters of where everybody's working within the district, as far as where the furthest officer is going to have to come from to get to the other furthest end of the district, just by kind of reallocating that and splitting it up. The biggest beneficiary of that's obviously going to be the West District, just with the size and how they're planning on chopping that up. So, yeah, I think that'll be beneficial.
I wanted to ask, when you are called to something, does that call go to all the officers in the area, or does it go to the person that's like sent, like for instance you're with the Midvale Heights, does it go just to you if it's in the Midvale Heights area, or does it go to everybody?
Yep, that's a great question. So every police call that's dispatched out is sent over the airwaves, so I can hear every call that anyone else is getting sent to within the West and South districts. They're all on one radio channel, and then Central, Downtown, and North are in East too, are all on one channel. What they try to do is if I'm not on a different call and it's happening within Midvale Heights or it's happening at the transfer point, it's my first area of responsibility, so they would send me. If it's a two-officer call, they'd send someone that's in a close area of responsibility to me along with me to back me up on that call. Obviously, if I'm on a different call or I'm on a crash and something else comes out, they have to send other officers. If I'm on a different call, like a phone message that I can break from and something's going on over here that's more important, I can break from my phone call and go to that because it's over that same over the air on my radio that I can hear everything that's going on. So certain people are sent to certain areas and that would go to whoever is responsible for that first, but it doesn't mean that we don't all hear it over the air and that other people can't go just depending on circumstance, but it's a good question.
Well, thank you, Dustin. Thank you very much, Steve. For being here today and doing this. I'd like to add that if anybody's interested in ride-alongs, send me an email. Respond to any of those crime alerts, because Dustin's a great person to go for ride-along. And you don't have to go for the whole 8 hours. You can go for 2, 4, 6, whatever. Just you have to sign up. Send me an email, and I'll connect you with it. Also, there's some information on the table. If you haven't got any of those pamphlets, please grab some. It's good crime prevention information.